on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there. Welcome aboard another edition of The Fish. And first cast is with Coffs Harbour's Kendall Kramer, who purchased a $150 budget inflatable stand-up paddleboard and turned it into a creek fishing machine and has been catching some absolute beauties. We know that Kendall's a great fisherwoman, but she's a great fish cook as well and shares some terrific ideas for cooking that bounty from the sea. Up the creek with Kendall up next, or should it be sup the creek with Kendall on The Big Fish? New segment on The Big Fish, Up the Creek with Kendall. Good morning, Kendall Kramer.
Morning, Scotty. How are you going?
Yeah, going well. You've had some great fishing adventures. Last time we spoke to you, you were tangling with a blue marlin and your friend from New Zealand was going to smoke it and eat it. That was pretty amazing and pretty exotic. But let's talk bread and butter fishing. You recently had a great trip up one of the many, many mangrove creeks near where you live at Coffs Harbour, but there are so many of them right up the mid-north and north coast all the way to the border, too many to mention. There'd be one near our listeners in that part of the world, and there's a lot to do there. There's a lot to catch, and you had some really good fun on the mud crabs, I believe.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The weather hasn't been spectacular to head offshore this school holidays, unfortunately. It's been up and down, so had a few adventures with my next-door neighbour up the river, and a couple of friends of mine have wanted me to take them fishing. And, you know, you're just getting back to those basics when some people want to start out and heading up the river in the boat and flicking out a little lure or a piece of bait looking for some whiting. We've found some luderick and threw some crab traps out over the last few weeks as well, before Christmas even too. And we've done really well on the crabs and a few river fish with a few different people in my life. So it's been an eventful school holidays of the bread and butter, back to basics, teaching people that don't even know how to tie a knot yet, that type of stuff. And it was really great to get back to basics.
It's a real adventure, isn't it? They pump some nippers. They love that. Set the crab pots where you're legally allowed to. In my estuary, you're not. It was tragic to see a beautiful big turtle inside a trap the other day. One of the members of a Facebook group on Brisbane Water documented that. I hope they've told fisheries. If not, I certainly will. But that was awful to see. But if you keep an eye on them and you're allowed to do it, then there's usually not too much trouble with the turtles. And then you go off and have a fish. It's interesting you mentioned you caught luderick on the nippers. I mean, that happens at this time of year, and they're usually stonkers too. They really give you a fight, don't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We weren't really expecting that species to come through. We were looking for whiting and flathead, you know, the general bread and butter that you want to go out and get the kids onto and new people to fishing, because they're a lot of fun to chase and they're a lot of fun to catch. And when you get to take them home and cook them up for people to eat for dinner, they just really get to see the reason that you go out and do this stuff. And that's how you get people hooked on fishing. And so we were out in the river and we were taking my next door neighbor's friend's little boy out to go catch a few fish. And, you know, we're hooking onto a fish and handing the rod on to our little mate, and he was having a fantastic time pulling in, you know, some really cracking whiting, like the, you know, 35, 38 centimeter whiting, like a really, really nice whiting. And so we got onto a couple of luderick just on a little, you know, cross section where the river splits into two. And just on a nipper that we'd pumped that morning, and it was fantastic. We got, I think, two luderick that day, and then we got another couple another day, and they were sitting between 30 and 35 centimetres. So, you know, we weren't going to complain about that. And we, you know, humanely killed it with the Ikijimi spike and took it home and we bled it properly so it tastes really beautiful. And, yeah, I ate it for dinner the other night. It was spectacular.
They're a lovely fish looked after properly, and that's beautiful the way you're respecting the fish there. Taking the skin off is really important with drummer and blackfish, isn't it? You know, there's so much iodine in the skin. Once your skin, and it's quite easy to do, once your skin, a blackfish fillet, it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful, white and lovely, and you know, as good as many fish in the wild. But the kids love whiting. I mean, you cannot eat a better fish in the estuary than a whiting, and crisp up the skin in a little bit of batter or a bit of flour, and they're the best, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Yep, so our little Charlie boy, he's taken home a couple of whiting in the last few weeks, and you know, as some kids are, they're a little fussy with what they eat and hate the idea of eating fish, but it's the best way to get them into it, is to take them out, get them to catch their own fish, and then they actually want to try it because they're interested then. But if you, you know, you serve them up a piece of fish on a plate, they haven't been a part of catching it and there's no interest. And I find that with kids, it's one of those things that you kind of have to do to try and get them to be interested in tasting different things when they're a bit fussy. And getting him to taste this fish was a bit of a milestone for his parents, which was really cool to see.
That's great. We're up the creek with Kendall Kramer. And did you have any mud crabs in the pots when you went back to check them? Because that's a great day out.
Absolutely, we did, yeah. So we're generally probably pulling up between 3 and 5 crabs and usually, you know, 2 to 3 keepers and the others we throw back. And, you know, if you find a crab that is in berry, which means they've got eggs in their little hatch down there, then you have to throw them back. But we haven't found any that have been in berry at this moment. So we have had quite a few crabs over the last little while, and you know, our friends and family have been benefiting from our catches, which has been awesome. And we did actually have another crab story there where I took a friend of mine fishing just off the bank. It was just like a couple of hours in the afternoon. She just needed to get out and, you know, a little mental health break. And we went for a fish off the bank in Yurunga. And she said to me, "Wait, that rock looks really weird." And she bent down and tapped on it. And sure enough, 2 little claws came up, and well, they weren't that little, actually. They were pretty big. And I wound my line in and I was like, don't touch it yet, because she didn't really know how to pick it up properly. And I was like, don't touch it. I'll come over. So I've gone over and it was just sitting in a little puddle on the sand and like relatively close to the mouth of the river. So, you know, all the other crabs that we've been catching have been a little bit further up in the brackish, a little bit muddy, a little bit sandy. But this crab was sitting in a hole that was just all sand. And I went over and picked it out of the hole. And, you know, her dad loves mud crabs and she was so excited to find this mud crab. So, you know, we picked it up and it was a really, really nice sized crab. Had a few barnacles and stuff on it.
Oh, that's always
around for a while.
Yeah, that's always a good sign, Kendall, isn't it? Because mud crabs can be notoriously hollow. You've got to push them down near their trap door. That you, what did you call it? The flap. You know, and you feel
if,
the hatch. You call it the hatch. Yes, the U-shaped flap, of course, on the females, and the berries will be under there. The eggs, so you let them go, and some people even let all the females go. You can keep them in New South Wales, but in Queensland, I think the rules might be different. But but if you see barnacles on the shell, that's a really good sign because you know it hasn't molted and you know it'll be full of meat. So I bet it was a nice big crab.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, I tied it up and we took it home and I threw it in the freezer for 20 minutes to put it to sleep. And, boiled it up nice and beautiful, and she took it around to her dad the next day, and he was stoked. He's, you know, loves fishing and stuff like that, but always claims that he doesn't really know what he's doing and he doesn't really have much success. So he was pretty excited.
Yeah, that's great. And the capture of Ludric on the nippers is a very common thing. It happens at this time of year, particularly when you're fishing. They'll take the worms as well if you're fishing for whiting, but Treno, our man on the mid-north coast, Cole the Waymaster Trenneman, was saying that when they're a bit finicky on the weed in his estuary system, he'll sneak in after the old time Ludwig fishermen being there with their floats and their light hooks and weed, you know, they've got the, such specialised gear. And he'll lob a nice big live nipper on the sand underneath where they've been fishing, and bang, he'll catch one every time. So they're not always vegetarian, are they?
No, absolutely not. No, they definitely come in to, you know, have a little chew on a nipper every now and then, which we've found out very much lately. I have done a little bit of black fishing every now and then with some weed, and to be honest, I haven't had the success that I've had in the rivers with the nippers lately. So I think it's definitely worth throwing a nipper on if you're not completely sure that they're wanting to be vegetarian that day, as you say.
Absolutely, and you'll often see them, particularly now the water's nice and warm, you'll see them following the stingrays across the sand flats. You'll see, you know, there could be trevally, silver trevally are in good numbers in my part of the world at the moment. There'll be ludric and also brim and whiting following that stingray, getting a feed as it disturbs worms and nippers. We're up the creek with Kendall Kramer, and look, you've got some good little creeks to fish around Coffs, haven't you? Boambi's a good one. They're everywhere, really. Anywhere there's regular opening to the sea, up in the mangroves, you're likely to get a mangrove jack as well, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. We were chatting to one of my neighbour. He had a friend who was camping on the bank of the river, up the river, when we were there, actually. And he had actually pulled in a couple of really nice jack overnight. They were there camping out and having a good time, and I didn't personally see one, but I'm not gonna discredit his success, because it was, yeah, some really, really nice jack up there, which I would actually like to go up there and have a bit of a crack at that. So might have to go up there at night time and give them a go.
Yeah, try surface lures. That's pretty heart-stopping stuff, Kendall Kramer. That sort of fishing is so accessible too, isn't it? You can buy a $200 kayak and be into that in the blink of an eye, or you can take a little fat flat-bottom punt up there, a little tiny boat and a little motor, or just row or paddle. I mean, it's very accessible and pretty safe. I mean, you've got to wear a life jacket and know what you're doing and know how to swim, but, you know, it's much safer than going outside or fishing off the rocks, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I've got a stand-up paddleboard, just, you know, one of those King's jobbies. And I've actually clipped a kayak seat to that, and I bought this little contraption off eBay where you can clip your board up the front to the D-rings, and it's got some fishing rod holders on it and stuff like that. So, you know, you can get away with that type of setup for very, very cheap. I think the stand-up paddleboard that I paid for was about $150.
Is it a blow-up one? A blow-up one, is it?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it is. Obviously, you've got to be careful with the fish spikes
but
when you bring one on board, but yeah.
Very shallow draft. I mean, you can get over any of the sandbars and right up the creek. That's a good idea, and nice to be able to stand up too and give your back a rest. That's much, much nicer than the kayak where you get a little cramped. And you can also Polaroid from that vantage point, I guess, too, Kendall.
Absolutely, yeah. It's actually a weapon of a little thing. I probably need to get it out and give it a little bit more of a run every now and then. I kind of forget about it sometimes, to be honest.
So you just stick a milk crate on as a seat and away you go.
Yeah. So I've got like a regular kayak seat, just a fabric one that has the clips on the back and the front, and the clips to the D-rings that's on the King's paddleboard. And basically, yeah, that's what I have, just a little milk crate that goes behind my seat, which carries all my stuff, and clip it all in case you accidentally flip it or something like that and you don't lose all your gear. But yeah, easy as.
So this segment really should be called Sup the Creek with Kendall Kramer.
Maybe.
What's Sup the Creek, Kendall? Oh, that's
What's
good fun.
The creek was a hell of a lot.
You got to watch out though with you know, using trebles on a surface lure or something, that you're not going to stick it into the side of the blow up paddle board. It's going to be a bit of a deflating experience.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If you've ever heard one of those things go pop, it can be a bit scary.
Mind you, for $150, that's a bit of a bargain. And so yeah, that's an interesting way to go. Very portable too, and you just whack it on the top of the car, or even deflate it and pump it up when you get to the location.
Yep, that's exactly it. I take it camping with me, you know, roll it up, throw it in the boat, because I carry everything in my boat where I go camping. So you've got all options. You can go out to the sea, or you can go up the creek and have a really compact little setup that you can inflate and get ready when you actually get where you're going.
And you get fit doing it.
Exactly.
No, it's a
something
great
I need.
great idea. Great idea. Sup the creek. Sup the creek with Kendall Kramer here at ABC.
Love it.
The Big Fish. Kendall, I mean, there are boundless creeks and lagoons like that in your part of the world, aren't there? I mean, you've got bigger systems. You mentioned Yurunga there, which is, you know, branches off into a couple of big systems. So that's a very large creek, but there are lots of small ones too, aren't there?
Absolutely. We were doing most of our fishing in Boambi Creek, but we've got Bonville as well, which is the next one south, and then you've got Coffs Creek, which is the next one north. And, you know, continue on, Moonee, that's a beautiful system as well. Red Rock, there's so many nice river systems around where I am. You just would never run out of options.
At places like Red Rock, though, you have to watch out at the mouth. It can be a bit dicey where it funnels out to sea. People have been sucked out there, so you've just got to be cautious in that part. But usually they're very, very safe. And you've got the options too, haven't you? The sandy flats at the beach end and up into the bush at the other end.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, just be safe. Wear a life jacket. Nobody needs to be a hero. You know, like people are going to appreciate your going out and being safe and not putting other people in danger and the emergency services if things I hope never go wrong. But, you know, just being safe is really important, especially when you're out there in the mouths and stuff like that where things could possibly go wrong. You just never know what's going to happen.
Absolutely. And flathead, obviously, they're a target species. You know, great incidental capture. You get one under 70 centimetres, you've got to feed.
Yeah. We got a couple of flathead between sort of the sizes of about 42 and up to, I think, 62 was the biggest one that we ended up catching around the rivers. So, beautiful, beautiful for dinner. Another excellent fish to take home and get the kids to have a try and things like that. So, you know, lots of ways to cook it. I'm a cooking teacher, so I like to get into some different ways of cooking fish. But, yeah, flathead and whiting out of the river systems, and then obviously your blackfish, if you treat it right, just amazing to eat.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you can be as fancy as you want to be or as basic, you throw it into a pan, can't you? Any tips on fish recipes that you teach the kids?
Oh, absolutely. My favourite, really, really quick, is just a little bit of flour, some salt and pepper, some garlic powder, some onion powder, a bit of thyme, a bit of basil, dried basil, and mix that all up with nice little seasoning and just roll it in the flour and shallow fry for a couple of minutes on each side on a nice little flathead tail. You can't beat it. I mean, people obviously love the beer batter and stuff like that, but you know, if you want to go a little bit fancier and do your batter and deep fry it, that's also beautiful. I quite like panko crumbed fish. I think that beats the tempura and the beer batter every day of the week.
Yeah, panko's lovely, crispy and crunchy, but I like your special seasoned flour. That's one to give a crack. Usually yeah. I just put a bit of salt and pepper in the flour, but that's a bit extra with those additives.
Yeah. And you know, anybody who likes a bit of chili, you can throw a bit of chili powder in there. That's always lovely.
Give it a little bit of zing, just a little tiny sprinkling of chili powder. That's a good idea. I never thought of really using all of that stuff to season the flour. I do put salt in the flour, but that's been about it. So that's a good tip, isn't it? So a bit of garlic powder and whatever herbs and spices you like into the flour, roll the fish in it and into the fry pan.
Absolutely. I'm not half silly, Scotty. I've got an idea or two.
Yeah, that's right, Kendall. Oh, look, it's a lot of fun talking to you. I love talking about that sort of fishing because it's a real adventure and it's safe and it's fun. And obviously mud crabs, I mean, boy, they're a bit of a bonus as well if you get a few crabs. Any special, can you do a Singapore chili crab? Are you up for that sort of stuff?
Oh, absolutely. I actually did like a chili and butter crab linguine with the first lot that we got. And then I did like a creamy pasta, like sort of like a carbonara, I suppose you would say, but instead of chicken or prawns in there, I put like some crab meat through there. And, you know, there's so many beautiful salads that you can make as well, like sort of like an Asian-inspired salad with a beautiful, like, soy sauce and sesame oil-type dressing with the crab through it. That's delicious as well.
I like the sound of a chili crab linguine. That's a really good one. Boy, I didn't know you were this so much of a gourmet. We'll have to give you a cooking segment as well. Hey, great to talk to you again, Kendall. It's really good that you're back on the water and catching lots of fish around your home at Coffs Harbour. Appreciate the chat.
Oh, my pleasure. Always good to come on and have a gas bag, my friend.
Get back into it. Tight lines, Kendall.
Tight lines. See you later, mate.
Up the creek or sup the creek with Kendall Kramer with some fantastic bounty of the sea.
Yeah, you get line and I get pole, honey. You get line and I get a pole today. You get line and I get a pole. Meet you down at that crawdad hole, honey. You know I mean right. Whoa, honey. You know I mean right.
And I'll catch you on the big fish, baby.
Sitting here, just sitting by the bay. I'm sitting here, just sitting by the bay. I'm gonna catch that fish today. Well, down below, the big fish just says tight. Down below, the big fish just says tight. Well, he don't want me mad, that fish won't bite. Well, I got no right, my got no reason. Got no fish, no big fish season. Make my hook, plan my dinner. Big fish Joe, I'm getting thinner. I'm gonna catch that book, big fish Joe. Well, I'm looking here, I'm looking everywhere. Yeah, I'm looking here, I'm looking everywhere. Well, he don't. Got no fish in the big fish season. Bake my hook, bang my dinner. Big fish Joe, I'm getting thinner. I'm gonna catch that boy, big fish Joe.
That boy's been smoking too much seaweed. Hook my line tonight. Well, I got no fish and my hands got damn sore. Yeah, I got no fish and my hands got damn sore. Well, I got that fish, I don't want that fish no more. Well, I got no breath, I got no reason. Got no fish in the big fish season. Make my hook, bake my dinner. Big fish joke, why I'm getting dinner. Gonna catch that boat, big fish Joe. Well, I got no rhyme, but I got no reason. I got no fish, no big fish season. Bait my hook, lay on my dinner. Big fish Joe, well, I'm a good dinner. Well, you can see my bones sticking out. Hey, big fish, let's go and do a little bit of backstroke. Give me, 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 give me
me your gills, big boy. Big Fish Joe.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Great to have you back, mate. And your sojourn on the Tweed is nearly over, but you've been living like a king. You target the good stuff. Giant whiting and mud crabs. I don't think you'd get better tasting tucker from the estuary, in my opinion.
Oh, look, it's a great pleasure for me and has been throughout my entire life to go out and catch something and then present it to the family. We can all sit around and feast on what's been caught. A lot of people go fishing for all different sorts of reasons, but that's my reason. I just like to go and catch enough fish. I stop when I've got enough, or crabs, the same, and then take them home. And then I'm also the cook. I don't trust anyone else with them. So I cook the fish, and I cook the boil up the crab, and we have a big feast. And, great pleasure to sit down and watch all the family, the kids and everybody else get stuck into whatever we've caught.
And I think you make a bit of a rod for your own back, because when you're good at filleting and you take the pin bones out and you present it well and you look after it when you catch it and put it straight in the esky, and, when you've got the technique down pat, they don't want to eat anything else. They want it the way John does it. I want Stinker's fish. So that's what the kids say, isn't it?
Well, I've never met anyone yet who really enjoys fish with full of bones. If you ask anyone, would you prefer bones or without bones, I know the answer to that question. So I've forfeited snapper and lobster for a month, and I've come up here onto the Tweed and fished pretty much three times a week. I've been going up into the lake, and I've caught these most magnificent whiting. Oh, dear me. Between 30 and 40 centimetres, and that 38 and 40 centimetres, they're thumpers. And then I'll fillet those, and as you say, take the bones out, and then I'll put the skeletons in the freezer, and then I'll get the crab traps out. I'll get two crab traps, and I'll bait them up with the skeletons of the whiting. So when I go whiting fishing next time, I drop the crab traps into the water, and then head off and dig some yabbies and catch some more whiting, and the whole cycle goes on and on.
It's all free. It's all supplied by nature. That's a real sense of achievement too, isn't it? You've pumped your own nippers, and last time we spoke to you, you spoke about how well they behave and perform after freezing them, which was a real revelation to me, even though they're a little bit softer and throw off the hook. But that was great to hear as well, if you get a few too many. But yeah, no bait costs, just 6-pound line, a little running sinker rig, a little swivel, a size 4 hook, and a little rod, and zzz, away they go on the shallow water, and you just let them run, don't you? There's nowhere they can go. You just play them, and they're so good. You play them very carefully, don't you? Because they are the jewel of the estuary. They're the best eating fish. I reckon they're the best eating fish in the water.
Well, yes, I've got a lot of people that agree with that. But it's interesting. I mean, you only use frozen yabbies as a last resort. If you can sort of avoid it. But, I mean, if you're really desperate, that's what you can do. But what I have been doing is I've been fishing right through the cycles of the tide, from low tide to high tide, the run in, and then the high tide to low tide, the run out. Now, I've been working out what was the best tide to target these big whiting. So I went through the whole lot, and I worked it out that half tide to the top of the tide, half tide in, is the best time to catch them. Over the yabby banks where you've dug the yabbies previously. Or what you can do is go up there, jump out of the boat, anchor the boat over the yabby banks, jump out into sort of thigh deep, over knee deep water, and then pump a few yabbies into your floating sieve, as you mentioned a week or so ago, and you don't need many yabbies. If you do, if you pump two dozen yabbies, that'll just about see you out. And then the issue is to get back in the boat. Now, this is all, this is always fun because it's not an easy thing to do, is to get out into sort of deep water and then get into a boat. So what I did, I took a stepladder. I was the only one on the river with a stepladder in the boat, and I put the stepladder, and it's a bit rockety, a bit rickety, and so I had to sort of be a bit careful because as you go up the stepladder, it sinks into the sand. And then I sort of, when I got to the step ladder, then I could step into the boat and then pull the ladder into the boat, and everything's sweet. But, oh, look, I've had so much fun.
That's really interesting how you've analysed the tides. And there's a Bute tide. I'm just looking up Terranora tides for this morning, Saturday the 31st of January. So at sunrise, it's about that half the rising tide. At about 6 o'clock, it's at 1 metre. And then by 9:50, it's a high tide of 1.8 metres. So you reckon that, you know, this morning at about a half the rising tide is the prime time. And then we've got those funny tides. We've got the really big one in the morning and the really small one in the afternoon or the evening. It's only 1.2. It's 1.8 there this morning. So that's a fair bit of tidal variation, Stinker.
Well, you don't go when the high tide is low. See, there's low high tides and high low tides. And it might sound a bit crazy, but that what you've just said then is exactly what it's all about. So what you want to do is go when there's a high tide that's around about, well, 1.8. Because there's more movement. There's more movement in the water if it's a high tide. If it's a 1.2 tide, well, there's very little change between high and low tide, which means the tide doesn't run very fast. You'll catch more when the tide runs fast than when it runs slowly. So I've worked everything out. All the variables I've worked out, and I can just sit around and do other things until the right time. And then I say, okay, I'm going now, and I'll be an hour and a half, and I'll be back in an hour and a half or 2 hours at the most, and I'll have these beautiful big whiting. And like you say, I just sit in the boat with my stepladder, and I've got two rods, and I put one on a rod holder on either side of it's a punt, a flat bottom punt, and then I just sit back and wait for it to go off, and it goes off. And once you've got a whiting, a big whiting, like you say, you can let it run and it can run as far as it likes because there's nowhere that you can get snagged. And you just take your time and make a little bit of sort of progress until it's beside the boat. And then I always scoop it because I'm afraid I'm lifting a big whiting over the side with a 6-pound line that something can go haywire. So I scoop it and then put it in an ice slurry, go straight into an ice slurry, and then I'll prepare it when I get home.
Just brilliant. We're speaking with Stinker, who's on the Tweed and talking about the giant whiting of the Terranora Lake. And yeah, that's just fantastic, Stinker. So if you're going this morning, after you've had a chat with me, you'll walk down the yard, hop in the punt, and you'll be hitting the halfway in tide. So that's the no run, no fun, as they say. At about 6 o'clock, there'll be a metre tide, and then it's going up to 1.8. The only variable in all of that, and I reckon you're spot on, because they're hunting up over those nipper beds, and it's a great idea what you're doing to, you know, fishing where you've pumped, so they've got that disturbed ground where they're hunting as well. You know, burling them in. But also, the only thing that I've seen as an exception to that is early season sometimes on the flats where I fish, that the water can be very cold sometimes in the estuary, and the run in tide can be a bit warmer or vice versa, and that can have an impact. But I love your theory.
the water's cold, you might as well stay home. But
that's right. Yeah, they love warm water, yeah.
Well, it's not cold at this time of the year up in the lake because the lake's very shallow and the sun's always beating down. And so the water is really quite warm. But the biggest problem up there, and they get me every time, are those stingrays. And you can see them. You can stand up and see them as the dark sort of clouds that move through the water. And if they're swimming near where you know your bait is, then you can quickly retrieve because you know that they're going to pick it up. And if they hook onto it, well, that's the end of that. And you just lose all your gear. So you can actually see them take your line, take your bait. So when they get near my bait, I wind like crazy so they don't get it.
Yeah, you don't want to go anywhere near those, the back end of them too. They're really deadly. Absolutely. And are you still catching the odd big javelin fish or barred grunter? Because you were saying they were a newer resident of the lake, quite a tropical fish. You catch them way up around Hinchinbrook and right up past in far north Queensland as well.
Yeah, well, I went out last week and we caught 10 or 12, but they're all undersized. And they're a problem too because they swallow your hook. And a small grunter, even longshank hook, they swallow it every time. I don't know what they're up to, but that's what they do. But there's one thing here. I mean, it's been a wonderful month I've spent here and I've really enjoyed it. But something most concerning, Scott, is that we all rely on mangroves and seagrass and seaweed as the first link in the chain of the habitat, which is essential for sustainability of our resources. I mean, that's written. We all know that. Well, what's missing in what we call the Terranora Lake system and most of the Tweed River and also the Cobbakai system, which also a branch off the Tweed River, that all the weed has gone.
And you mentioned this last time we had a chat, that the locals have observed flotillas of black swans, which are beautiful creatures and no one would ever harm one, plucking away at it. And same with your old mates across at Tea Gardens reporting a very similar issue. Is this a new problem? Is it an old problem? Has it been there since the dawn of time? Is there a balance problem? Have we even acknowledged the problem from a habitat point of view when it comes to fisheries, Stinker?
Well, acknowledging the problem is the first step to be taken. Now, no one, well, that's not quite true, but very few people realise or have now become to realise that the swans are the problem. Now, it happens in Port Stephens, but what it's done in the Tweed is basically turned it into a desert. Now, as a direct result of that, then there are no gar. Now, every time this year, for as long as I've spoken to you for many years, I've always said to you, oh, look, I'm having a great time. The garfish are big. They're big garfish.
And they're the snub-nosed gar. They're different to our lake and river and sea gar, aren't they?
Oh, totally. They're big, round fellows, and you can fillet them quite. You get a beautiful fillet off them. Whereas the sea gar, you only get a little thin strip. But they've been here as long as I can remember. And even my father used to fish for them many, many years ago. From October, they come in and they stay around for summer. This year, I jumped in the boat through the week in a tinny and just went for a ride. And I took a heap of bread with me because they come to bread. And I went to all the spots that I have fished over all the years. The seagrass is gone, but I thought, oh, look, I'm going to burley anyway and just see what. Nothing. Not one garfish came to the surface. Heaps of brim, little brim. Oh, the places. You can walk on the brim, but the garfish, gone. Seagrass, gone. Swans, there's this this little one, cygnets, following around the parent birds, and they're really breeding in big numbers. So that's the problem. Well, that's a major, major part of the problem. And people who spend a lot of time on the water will tell you exactly the same thing. And anyone who is observant will tell you the same thing. So sooner or later, fisheries are going to realise it. And then what you do about it, well, I don't know. I've got no idea what to do about it. But I can identify it, but I don't know what to do about it.
ABC, it's The Big Fish. We're speaking with Stinker. And it's sad, Stinker, because you used to regale us of great stories of battling those little mini marlin, the snub-nosed gar. They don't have the big beak like the ones further south that we tangle with. But then they get, well, they get to big sizes, you know, over 40 centimetres. You reckon they were the size of cricket stumps, which always made me laugh. But, you know, they are quite a substantial fish by the look of it. Not to have them in that system must be really, really sad for you.
Well, it's sad for everybody. I mean, it's sad for the environment. When a whole heap of fish just disappear, you always say, well, there's got to be a reason. The reason is there's no seagrass, because that's what they dined on. When you caught them, when you caught a big gar and you cleaned them, that's what they were full of, seagrass. They'd been munching away on the seagrass. And now they didn't cause any problem at all. But our mates, the black swan, they're really causing some trouble. And it was brought to my attention in Pindyma many years ago. And really, I sort of didn't take a great deal of notice of it. I said, it sounds like a bit of an overreaction to me. But I've already formed my opinion that that is actually what's happening.
And it's tragic that a species disappears from a waterway. And if you read the guidebook for that part of the world, tips for fishing Terranora Lakes, it says, location, look for shallow, weedy areas and sandbanks near seagrass beds, which provide both food and shelter for the fish. And then you use a little bit of dough on a little hook and a little bit of cork or a little float, and you have a lot of fun and get a feed. But it's tragic they're not there, John. And the locals know, don't they? If they're not there, no, they're not there.
Well, I contacted a mate of mine who lives up here, and he goes the other direction. I go to Terranora Lakes. He goes to Kobokai Lakes up behind the airport at Coolangatta, the Gold Coast Airport. And there's a big system up there called the Weedy Broads. It used to be called the Weedy Broads. And I spoke to him through the week, and I said, how's it going? I said, we lost all the weed in Terranora. He said, it's all gone in the Weedy Broads. They don't call it the Weedy Broads anymore. And I said, what's the problem? And he said, you won't believe this. He said, it's swans. I said, I believe it, all right, mate. The same thing's happening where we are.
And you're not seeing any at all, John? They're not coming to the bread?
No, nothing. Nothing at all. Only miserable little brim. Yeah, so that's all that's happening. But, look, I don't like to be negative, but someone's got to confront these issues somewhere along the line. I'd love to know if anyone comes up with some solution. Please contact me, because I haven't got one. But we've also, look, there's another thing that bothers me too. I've got to tell somebody, Scott. You're the best one.
No, I'm all ears, mate. Confess, son.
Right. Well, I must tell you that it's been reported to me. I still get phone calls from people back in Port Stephens, and I've had three calls this week and said, it's finally happened that the pippies on Stockton Beach have all been removed, and now Stockton Beach, you'd be lucky if you can get enough to cover the bottom of your bucket. I warned about this before Christmas, that commercial fishers from way up north have been working the beaches further south until they get to Stockton, and then take all the pippies, and we just hope that they can come back. Because at the moment, there's nothing there. It's just very, very poor fisheries management, and it's caused a lot of angst and a lot of dissatisfaction in Port Stephens, that people can come into our area and ruin our beautiful natural resources. And we're not happy about it, Scott.
No, it's interesting speaking to the boss of fisheries in Victoria, the VFA, Travis Dowling. And he said, look, fisheries management is complex, but it's also quite simple. The bottom line has to be sustainability. He said, if a practice isn't sustainable and the science proves that it's not sustainable, and that's certainly been the case with the management of the Pippi fishery, then he said, you don't do it. It's as simple as that. Because if you don't have a fishery, if you don't have the fish, or in this case, the shellfish, and it is rather selfish to take all the shellfish, stinker, many would believe.
Yeah, well, I've just had another phone call from a regular who fishes down there and has done for years. He said the fishing's never been worse. He said he just can't catch a whiting on Stockton Beach anymore. And now, the trouble is, it's legal. So we've contacted the Minister for Fisheries to make her aware of the situation. Don't worry about it. We're told not to worry about it because everything's fine. You know, it'll all recover. Okay, so we've got to sit back and hope that that's the case. Well, what do we do in the meantime? I just can't figure it out. But I've got some good news.
Let's finish on happy stuff.
Yeah, let's finish on a happy note. I don't like whinging, but look, it's just so bizarre that decisions can be made without any consideration for the future of the resource. Anyway, that's enough of that. But well, I've got to tell you this, that another mate of mine in Port Stephens contacted me through the week, and he said that he and his son, through the week, decided to focus, and he's a catch and release. He catches and releases everything, except crabs. He's a real good crabber. He doesn't release crabs.
No, they're good to eat.
They're good. But he catches everything that wriggles. This bloke can catch. Anyway, he took his son, and they decided they'd focus on flathead in Port Stephens. And now this is, I'll just tell you what he caught in this week. He caught one that went 98, then another one went 93, 90, then a 93, 89, 87, 83, 81, and an 80. And they'd moved around the port, and he caught all those flathead on lures and let them go. And one of the 93s that he got had a tag on it with, so he sent those details to DPI. But isn't it wonderful to be able to report that Port Stephens, and he moved around. He never caught all these fish in the same spot. He just went, once he'd caught a couple in one spot, he just, even though we could caught more, he upped and went to another spot and just kept moving around the port and caught 10 flathead well over 80 centimetres, let them all go, and just thinks, how good's that?
Well done to the King Coles, the Coles boys. You sent the photographic evidence to me. They're beautiful fish and swimming off none the worse for wear to breed more flathead. It's a great story and shows you how healthy that system is. And that's a great example of good management practices, letting the big girls go, Stinker. So it's not all gloom and doom. Tight lines, buddy.
Hey, hooroo, Scott.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You'll feel fresh as a lemonade setting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot for whistling like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day. We'll have no need to call the road when we get to the fishing hole. There'll be you, me, and old dog Trey to doodle time away. If we don't hook a perch or bass, we'll cool our toes in dewy grass, or else pull up a weed to chaw and maybe set and jaw. Hanging around, taking our ease, watching that hound, a-scratching at his fleet. Come on, take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.
The Big Fish on ABC Radio.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.